It's been, actually, it's been since 2017 since we've done this kind of format of telling the story, having the community members tell their stories in a series format like we are doing starting today. And I want to invite forward Scott Babcock and Delilah Brookstone. Yeah. Irene is enthusiastic because she was here at 9:30, so... So I am so honored, and I think you will be too, when you hear these stories of the vulnerability, the bravery, and whatever else it took to get you two here to tell your stories. Scott's is a little more recent, well, a lot more recent. It's just happened this year and very specific. And it's the first time he's told the story and really still in the story. So we're going to tell Scott's a little bit differently with three voices as one. We know we all share a bit of the same story as humanity. So it is in the spirit of oneness that we share Scott's. Scott has been part of this community for a very long time, contributed in lots of ways, including being on the board a couple of times and in the AV team and a key player in bocce in particular, but in the men's group experience. You're going to get to hear a little bit about bocce and his story. And Delilah Brookstone, a little newer to our community. She's been here since I've been here in 2017. And she makes the slides every week that you see on the service. Yes. She also contributes to our youth ministry by substituting for Michelle and helping with the kids. And also, she's part of the music team. And sometimes you'll see her on stage in the opening songs with an ensemble. So thank you both so much for telling your stories and for all the ways you contribute to our community. So we begin with Scott's. And welcome to everybody on the online audience. You're in for a treat.
Good morning, everyone here. Good morning, everyone there in online land. My name is Scott, and this is the recent story of my heart.
A few months ago, a feeling of indigestion began on Friday and lasted all day. I'd experienced this sensation before, and I knew how to get rid of it. So when I finished work, I laid down in my car and expected it to go away.
But it didn't. My head felt cloudy too, so I decided to take the surface streets home instead of the highway in case I went unconscious.
The physical sensation and mental fogginess persisted, so as soon as I got home, I asked my wife Julie to take me to urgent care.
They did an EKG there, and the doctor said, "You're having a heart attack."
I mentally scoffed at this because I just could not believe it.
A heart attack doesn't fit the image of who I am physically. I'm fairly fit, and I even gave up eating cookies.
When the urgent care folks sent me to John Muir Hospital in Walnut Creek, I thought, we'll get to the bottom of this mystery.
The EMT said, "You're lucky you got here when you did. You'd be dead by now if you hadn't." Yep.
I heard what he was saying, but I just couldn't take it in emotionally.
I arrived in the ICU and was hooked up to a heart monitor and examined by several more people.
Then the cardiologist came back into the room, sat down, looked me straight in the eye and said, "You've had a heart attack."
For the first time, I let it in and I started to accept it.
And the medical staff rolled me into a room to insert stents into the left ventricle artery. I was awake and told them it sounded like they were playing video games.
They laughed at that and then sent me on another ambulance ride to John Muir Concord's cardiac unit.
Humor must have been helping me to cope. The next morning, when the doctors told me I needed to have two more stents put in, I said, "Oh boy, do I have to be there for that?"
They also put a heart pump in my left ventricle, the part that pumps out blood to the entire body.
A day later, the catheter in my neck started to leak. The staff responded with urgency while calmly telling me, "You have a little bleeding going on."
I was soothed until I heard somebody yell out, "Go get me the medicine, quick!"
About then, my view of the ceiling tiles started to diminish. I'm guessing I may have come close to the other side of that curtain, though I did remain conscious.
Even through all that, I felt calm and peaceful.
I just had a knowing, capital K, that it would survive, even while eating that ever ironic thing we call hospital food.
In the hospital, I had a lot of time to think and just be. And definitely, I had a few poignant WTH, what the heck, moments.
How could I have a heart attack? Over the years, I had extensively hiked and biked and swam. I've walked for a living as a letter carrier. I really thought I was healthy.
There were times when I was laying in that hospital bed and felt everyone's prayers for me show up as a million angels of joy that filled the room.
Over the next few days, random snapshots of my life started to drift in.
Like when I was 14, my older brother invited me to go with his friends to Joshua Tree.
I looked at the map with them, and as soon as we started hiking, I knew we were going the wrong way. I didn't say anything because my big brother would know where he was going.
When they noticed they were going the wrong way, I decided in that moment to trust my instincts more.
The heart attack deepened and affirmed that. That's what I was doing when I chose to take those surface streets home and when I asked Julie to take me to urgent care.
I don't believe I would be here had I not trusted that innate knowing.
Then, while I was lying there, a memory of a sales training arose when someone asked me, "How do we know that we aren't trying to manipulate the people?"
The response has always stayed with me. That response was, "If it's from your heart, it cannot be manipulation."
Then an image came through of my mom putting food in the linen closet when I was a young boy. "Why, Mom?" I asked. "In case the army man comes," she said. I didn't know until later that she was responding to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
So much history in a lifetime. Yet 100% of life, scientists say, won't even be here in 9 billion years.
My thoughts drifted to the awe of the Grand Canyon. The amount of time it took to lay down all those colorful layers, and how long they laid there under immense compression until the land finally rose and cut a river through it.
Earth, human existence, my existence, it all intertwined there.
I don't know why I survived. It must be to finish what I'm here for, even if I don't know what that is just yet.
I do know I'm grateful for life. My cat, Gandalf, who regularly blocks our path from the bedroom to the kitchen when he's hungry.
He's named Gandalf for Gandalf the Grey in Lord of the Rings, who faces the monster on a narrow bridge over a deep chasm. He puts his staff down while he says, "You shall not pass!"
And neither shall I. It's not my time.
Mm-hmm. When I was told it was time to start cardiac rehab, I decided I need to have a goal. And it immediately popped in. Walk the John Muir Trail in 2 years.
I've had this dream for a long time. This time, I'm doing it. I'm studying maps and logistics, and my dream is becoming more real each day.
My intention is to be there and to watch the mountains grow. I'm doing great in rehab, and I do look forward to my next step in this journey.
You know, some people get hit by a cosmic 2x4, and then they have an immediate revelation. For me, this heart attack has caused a gradual deepening.
I look at Mount Diablo and notice it's a bit more special. The plants and the trees growing, the tender shoots of grass, all of it is a bit more special these days?
It's really hard to describe because it gets into a mystical area that can only be experienced. I feel more alive when I appreciate life.
Life is a good word. I'm experiencing life as a beingness. There's a deeper knowing, again, capital K.
And I'm not taking things so personally anymore.
Now, when a flash of irritation comes, I take a moment, well, in one of my better moments, and I acknowledge that irritation.
I'm getting better at listening to what a person is saying and responding to that instead of just my own emotional reaction.
The dietitian called and said inflammation and stress management is the key. And I said, I'm putting my stress managers on notice.
Scott's world will be a better place to live after I reorganize that stress management team.
I've also been taking time to acknowledge human oneness. Recently, during a bocce game, I stepped out and deliberately took in the whole group of a couple hundred people.
However, at first thought, I said, I don't like the shoes that guy is wearing. Then I transcended that petty thought and felt the oneness.
I like to imagine the changes I'm making affect everyone. A positive energy released into the world.
I see now how the medical procedures that took place to restore my heart, that deep winnowing from the pump in my heart all the way down into my leg, how that mirrors the deepening of my knowing, capital K.
The wisdom root is punched down deeper into the earth for me now. I feel more rooted to earth and have more trust in myself.
And I know this too. Since 1973, I've wanted to walk the John Muir Trail, especially through Evolution Valley and through the High Sierra.
Walking through Evolution Valley is what we are all doing here.
Mm-hmm. Now, because of this heart attack, I am physically able to walk through Evolution Valley and realize my dream. I am so grateful to be alive. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, sit down.
My name is Delilah, and this is my story. From as far back as I can remember, I have felt sad. Like I had a hole in me that no one else had. Like I was watching a TV show of all the shiny, happy people in the world in color, and I was born in black and white. On both sides of my family, I come from generations of traumatic mental health and substance use issues. My mother, as brilliant and beautiful as she was a drug addict, and she suffered greatly with bipolar that stemmed from the physical, psychological, and sexual trauma she endured as a child. She came and went in my life, leaving me in the care of my father, who was an emotionally and psychologically damaged child of an alcoholic. He did the best he could with what he had, but his violent outbursts and unpredictable behavior were not conducive to the stable childhood I needed and deserved. But, as always, Spirit protected me. And at the age of 5, my dad was called to put me into the Big Brothers Big Sisters program to try to provide me with a little bit of positive feminine influence. And that's when I met Eileen. I remember being so fascinated with her energy as a child, since I had never experienced anyone with such a stable life in my short existence. And I immediately formed an attachment to her. She saw the brokenness my parents had left me with and never had any children of her own. So she loved me the best she could, as a mother would. When I was 9, she and my father married and moved us from the poor Mission District in San Francisco to a well-off suburb in Walnut Creek. Later, I found out that she married him to be closer to me, and she tolerated a lot from my father to be with me. His addiction to anger was caused by his inability to process his own childhood trauma, and that was inflicted on the two of us on a regular basis. I've always called her my guardian angel, since she has consistently protected me and tried to guide me. Unfortunately, the hole I felt as a child grew into a chasm in my adolescence, and her guidance was not enough to keep me from derailing. The move was a big shock, and I was bullied at my new school for being different and from the city. That compounded my sadness and manifested into a great depression. Months after we moved, at age 9, I swallowed a bottle of Tylenol with the hopes of ending my life. I slept for many, many, many hours, and to my annoyance, I woke up the next day. No one even noticed. As any child would be, I was completely in the dark about the spiritual defects that were tormenting my soul. All I knew was that I had this hole, and I wanted it filled. So began the lifelong habit of reaching outside to fill that ebony crater that was in my inside. As early as age 5, I could remember the comfort I felt from my first addiction. Sugar. Around age 11, I began with tobacco, followed by pot. Almost immediately following came the drinking, along with the thrill-seeking behavior. I was running away and shoplifting, along with seeking inappropriate relationships and getting into cars with strangers. I was 12 or 13, trying to get attention from older men because the darkness in me said that if they paid attention to me, that I was worthy of love. The truth of the matter was that the things I was letting them do to me were making my already broken spirit feel less and less worthy. I was constantly in this battle where my actions were contradicting what my spirit felt. These actions feeding the darkness and growing the hole bigger and bigger and darker, ultimately developing into a full-blown disease of addiction before I reached the age of 14. With substances and behaviors, my juvenile spirit finally saw a way out of my sadness, even if it was only for a moment. I could finally feel excited sometimes, and my favorite feeling, detached or disassociated. I could be whoever I wanted to be, or so I thought. In actuality, at the detriment of discovering who I really was, I was becoming whoever you wanted me to be so that you would love me. My dad and Eileen had no idea what to do with me. It was 3 years of complete chaos. Then one day, my dad snapped and physically struck me for the first time. I called my mother, who was in Pennsylvania, and I was on a plane to her days later, not speaking to my father again for about 4 years. In Pennsylvania, my mom was still using, but she had put herself together enough to have a house and to build a small business. She was so, so, so smart and charming, and her luminescence when she was around would light up a room. But she didn't subscribe to any part of the system and how most people live their lives. She said they were blind sheeple, living with their heads in the sand while the government kept them small. Needless to say, when I said I didn't want to be part of the educational system that was keeping me small, she said, no problem, and I dropped out of school at age 15. I worked full-time, and I partied full-time. I was really good at presenting myself as older, and I went to a club where I met a 24-year-old predator who smelled my vulnerability a mile away. He was a drug addict, or drug dealer, And I was a broken little girl who was an addict, so he had no problem sinking his claws into me. I was physically, psychologically, and sexually assaulted for about a year before he got picked up for violating his probation and taken to jail. With that, the spell was broken and I was free from him physically. But the scars he left still haunted me for almost 2 decades. The 4 years I spent in Pennsylvania were a blur of self-demoralizing and dangerous behaviors that contributed to my inter-dichotomy. I was 17 when my mom disappeared again and left my brother and I to fend for ourselves. It was only a couple of years later that I had nothing left. So I made my way back to California and back to my guardian angel. I knew I had a problem, so I began to seek help. I had been in and out of therapy my whole life, so I went back to that, and I did AA and kept coming back. I tried Celebrate Recovery and Refuge Recovery. I took addiction studies classes at DVC, yet no amount of education ever seemed to fill that hole. It wasn't until I had my beautiful son, Dylan, that I was truly motivated to be different. I refused to raise another generation into this same generational trauma. I swore I would be the one that would break this chain. I wish I could say I gave birth and poof, I got sober and everything was perfect. Sorry, that's not my story. I let myself become trapped in another abusive relationship with another broken alcoholic when Dylan was a baby. And that kept me solidified in my addiction for another 7 years. I never stopped trying to get sober, though, getting weeks and months of consecutive sobriety at a time, but I would always get pulled back into the darkness until finally, I really, really lost it all. In 2017, in the darkest depths of my disease, I got myself kicked out of nursing school, convicted of my first DUI, and a month later watched my house burn down with all of my pets and everything I ever loved inside. I knew at that moment I had to get sober, but I felt so trapped in this abusive relationship, and I knew I couldn't get sober if I stayed with him. I knew if I didn't get sober, I was going to drag Dylan down into this darkness that I promised him that I wouldn't. I was hopeless. And for the third time, I tried to take my own life. Laying in the hospital, the nurse asked me why, and I told her, my son would be better off without me. She was in shock, and she said those words back to me. Your son would be better off without you? Something in that moment just clicked, and I knew, in fact, it would be the opposite. He would have a miserable existence. He would have a miserable existence without me, and his life would never be the same. I knew in that moment that I had to get better for him and for me. Thanks, Mario. This October, I will be 4 years sober. Thank you. 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 It was harder to take at the first service. I think I got used to it, and now I can just like take it in. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I graduated from Cal State East Bay last May, cum laude, with a bachelor's of public health. My dream has always been to be a healer. And finally, I have found the purpose of my pain. For me, I know the one thing that kept me sick so long was feeling alone in my trauma. The shame of it that we carry keeps us small and alone. The cycle of shame kept me stuck. I used more and then felt shame, so I used more and then felt more shame. I have realized that I was given this trauma as a gift so that I can destigmatize these experiences and share with others what is possible. To demonstrate that no one is ever truly stuck unless they choose to be, that we are never alone, no matter how much our darkness tells us that we are. I'm about to apply to grad school to be a nurse practitioner. I'm working in an absolutely amazing functional medicine clinic, getting mentorship from some of the most spectacular women healers. I am in a wonderful relationship with a very special man who loves me for exactly who I am, because he sees my special even through all of my dark places. We support each other and love each other and learn from each other how to be better partners and how to be better humans. I have the most incredible son, and I get to see that he's growing up without that darkness. It's such a gift to know that I was actually able to give him the stability that I lacked as a child. I get to take care of my sweet stepmother, who always cared for me, even when I didn't deserve it. I get to be a part of a magical spiritual community here at Unity, where you all love me, and I get to be myself, just the way I am. As for my mother, thank you. Thanks, Mario. Thank you. As for my mother, in her last years before dying of cancer 2 years ago, I got to help her get sober and give her the best years of her life. Such gifts. All of these gifts are unbelievable, and I am grateful for it every single day. But it has not come easy. Healing is messy and feels impossible some days. It's one step forward and two steps back. On a regular basis. Sometimes it's even two steps forward and 10 steps back. But it's imperative that I always take those steps forward. I always let the fear of approval, the fear of loss, and the fear of not being good enough block the sunlight to my spirit. But you know what? All of that was false evidence appearing real. One of my favorite sayings from AA. Fear. Fear is not my reality anymore. It was there as an unhealthy coping mechanism that I created because I needed to survive. But today, I get to say thank you to fear for protecting me all those years, but that I don't need you anymore. I get to choose who I am and where I am going and do not live in fear anymore if I choose it. I'm definitely still building trust for myself, since for so many years, my body did things that my spirit did not approve of. But I do get the gift of living with a little less self-criticism and a little more self-love and way more strength if I choose it. How did I get here? I always followed that tiny little voice in me that said, you can be better. That there was a purpose to this pain, that I was meant to help others in a bigger way. Somewhere in my spirit, I was able to see the capacity I had, even if I didn't always believe it. But the more I followed it, the louder the voice became, and until it was completely unacceptable to live the way that I had been living before. I am alive and blossoming, all thanks to the sunlight of the spirit that I chose to follow. Thank you. Something we learned in AA was to make amends for those we harmed in our disease. And I felt that I was the one that I hurt the most. So I wrote myself this letter when I first got sober 4 years ago. And I'd like to share it with you all today. Dearest Delilah, I don't even begin to know where to start to make amends for all of the terrible people, places, and things that I led you to suffer through, for the years of sadness that I trapped you in, making you believe that it would always be that way. For the countless people that I let take advantage of you. For the innumerable times I funneled poison into your body and mind. For the dangerous places I took you and the dangerous people I convinced you were a good idea to know. For all the times I told you that lying or stealing was better than being honest or simply just asking. For the lifetime of fear I brainwashed you into believing was truth. For my inability to let you know that the trauma, the abandonment, and the pain, it wasn't your fault. For not telling you that not only were you good enough just the way you are, but you're actually more special than most. For all this and more, I am accepting responsibility for my actions, and I'm swearing to you with all the love in my being, all of that ends now. I promise to always work my hardest to bring you the beautiful life you deserve. From this day forward, I am the one who loves and supports you the most. And I am the one who is present and resolute in telling you that no matter what happens, you'll always be okay because I am always with you. Thank 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 you.